Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, here we are. It's Tuesday at 2 p.m., and it's time for another Gear Garage Live Show. This is a show I try to do every week, live on YouTube. If you're watching live and you have questions, please put them in the comments. I have a bunch of questions people ask me ahead of time I'm going to try to answer. And if you ask questions along the way, I'll be happy to answer them here. So thanks for watching, everybody. And let's get going with our agenda. And the first thing I want to do is just once again talk about our sponsor, GoRafting.com. I try to remind everybody once a month about them. A lot of you just got your permits. You just got a permit for the Middle Fork, the Rogue, whatever you got. And I really think this is the future of maps and guides. For a lot of reasons. One is that rivers change, but maps don't. Whereas like online maps can change and they can be updated. So if there's new rapids, new hazards, those things can be updated this way. This is a great way to like have a living document that lives on your phone and can help you navigate rivers that you're on and know some of the cool spots. I used it on the Grand Canyon and it helped us pick some great camps. There were camps I wasn't sure about, but I saw photos of them in the app that had been downloaded. So you can download everything ahead of time, even the photos. And I was like, oh, that's a cool looking camp. Let's go there. And it was cool. And so I really like the maps personally. And it tells you where you are on the river and how far to the next thing. So it's not like a map where it's just like showing you a dot on a river. It like knows that you're 1.2 miles away from such and such camp, or, you know, Blossom Bar is 1.1 miles away, 1.0 miles away, 0.9 miles, like tells you how far you are until the next thing. And it tells you distances away from things as well as showing where you are on a map. So they're really well done. It's the Far Out is the app. So you download the app Far Out, which has guides to all kinds of stuff. It has like, I'm pretty sure it has like Pacific Crest Trail. It has Appalachian Trail, all kinds of, it's mainly hiking trails, but the people that go rafting make all the river maps for them. And so they use the technology that's been built for a very large app and apply it to the river stuff, which is small. And so it's great technology. The dudes at GoRafting.com, they're all former guides. Some of them are still guides. They know these rivers really well. They're in touch with outfitters who know the changes. And so it's just a good match. So I highly recommend checking it out, especially if you just got a permit somewhere, like you got a road permit. This is a great map to get. And the other maps are cool too. And some of you might be like, oh, I don't do phones on rivers. I just use maps. Cool. Keep using maps. But I'm bringing a phone on every trip I do. It's my camera. It's my emergency communication device. I don't even need a spot anymore because they have like satellite communication. And I'm taking photos and videos with my phone. I bring a fancy camera sometimes, but this is really my phone's my main thing. And this is, you have your map there. Now, if your phone dies, if you lose it, you don't have a map. But the same thing, I've seen tons of people flip their rafts, especially on the Middle Fork when it's high water, and lose their map. You know, that's a bummer, but you can have to learn how to share or, I don't know, figure it out somehow. So anyway, that's my quick spiel for, they're a sponsor of the show. And so thank you to GoRafting.com for being a sponsor and for making that really cool app. They didn't make the app, they made the maps. And they, and by the way, I should really show you all the maps really quick. There's tons of them. And the deal here, I mean, I think you can buy, here's a blog about the Klamath during the transition. This is super cool. I saw somebody had a question about the Klamath. And I don't know anything about it. So my answer is going to be, I don't know. But here's a nice little blog post about it. So this might help. It would be cool if GoRafting.com had a map of the new Klamath. That would be awesome because it's new to all of us. Like, we'd all use it. So that's cool. But this Whitewater Classics bundle is $60. And it includes, like, all the classic rivers. So for $60, you're getting... I forget what's even in it. Let me see if I can click this and it tells me. It has Grand Canyon, Middle Fork, the Foo, the Rogue, the Tassanshini, Ruby Horse Thief, the Kern, a bunch of day trips that I don't think I would use this app on a day trip myself. But who knows? Like the Pecuari, if I go to Costa Rica, I'm probably not going to use this. The wind, I use it there if I was new to the wind. The Hood, South Fork, Middle Fork, Health Canyon, East Carson. That's a cool overnight trip in the just east of the Sierras. That isn't that well known for unless you live in the area. But it has, I mean, this the bundle has like the Grand Canyon, Middle Fork, Rogue. That's like, that's worth $60 easily. It's a steal. And oh, the Illinois is, I did the Illinois map for them. I don't see the Illinois. It used to be in the bundle. They might have taken it out. Whoa, that's big news that they took it out. Maybe they did. Yeah, there's also a map of the Illinois here, and I did it. And so it's good. Yeah, it's decent. River Rafter. Have you ever built a boat IK with helium? No. This is a joke. That's like, yeah, that's something that we've joked about before, but the logistics of filling with helium are, I don't know, like, I don't know where to start. Or if it would help, or if I would care. Yeah, I think this is a joke. River Rafter, is this a joke? Being serious? Or are you just messing with me? I don't know. Okay, anyway, back to our skid row questions. We have a lot of questions. The first one, Thoros. On the Ocoee River in southeast Tennessee, we are permitted by Tennessee State Parks, and they oversee the day-to-day. I went to the Ocoee, by the way, for my first time in December and saw it. It's very – I felt it was very well regulated. I felt like the River Ranger was nice, firm. People listened to him. I watched – like there were some private boaters who just parked their stuff in everybody's way, and he just moved their stuff. Like as a commercial guide, if I did that, I'd yell that. But it's also when a private boater just rudely puts their stuff right in the middle of the way, and like somebody has to do something. So I was glad to see some enforcement there. I thought the regulation was more than I've seen other places, but I liked it, honestly. Anyway, proposed new rules require the throw rope 3/8-inch diameter, 70 feet long in every commercial boat with a knife in every boat. I definitely agree with a knife in it with every throw rope, but I'm having a hard time with a rope in every boat. Current rule states a throw rope with every 6 boats and no knife requirement. The Ocoee is wide and shallow in most places. We have had a death and a degloving of a digit in the past few years from throw ropes. Yeah, okay, this is getting about to get, I see where we're going with this. This is about to get complicated. I'll keep going and I'll finish, I'll give my thoughts. I like senior guides who have training to carry throw ropes, but I think of the first and second year guides who are just trying to learn how to function as a river guide, and most are not ready to carry a throw rope and a knife. A busy July, August, Saturday might have 1,000 commercial boats per day, which means the potential for many drop knives in the river. Thoughts? Man, I do. I have really complex thoughts, and it's going to be hard to share them here. I'll do my best. So first of all, I feel that every guide slash boat should have a rope. And I feel like every guide should carry a knife. But that's assuming, like, the fact that you say that first and second year guides aren't trained on these things makes me worry. I feel like guides should be trained in how to use a throw bag before they become guides. So I have so many random complex thoughts. I'm going to jump from topic to topic. That's one topic. I feel like guides should have throw ropes. That should just be a standard piece of equipment. Also, throw bags are incredibly dangerous. Like there are several examples of fatalities of commercial guests being caught up in throw ropes, usually thrown from a raft, but also thrown from shore when they didn't need to be thrown. So I think what happens sometimes also is people take rescue classes from firefighters, and firefighters' main tool is a rope. And so they're whipping ropes all over the place. But we should, so people are too rope happy. And so getting proper training and guides about when to use a rope and how to use it, I think is really important. If you're not trained on a rope, how to use a rope, it could become dangerous. So I see where you're at. Like if you're not training guides to use throw bags, then maybe they shouldn't have them because they can cause fatalities, and they have caused fatalities. That's a tough one. I think you should train. I think all the guides, I mean, should learn how to throw ropes. That should be part of their guide training. A general thesis I have is that guide training in some parts of the U.S. is pretty lacking, and that we need to do better, more comprehensive guide training. So I would say you should have throw bags in every boat, but also that guides should be trained on how to use them and when not to use them. I'm also not a big fan of government regulation on this stuff. I think each company should be able to make their own policy based on their own risk management. I don't think a government agency, Tennessee State Parks, should be mandating things either. Like, that's not the role of them. We as rafting companies are going to make decisions based on the safety of our customers based on that situation. And the Tennessee State Parks are not experts in whitewater boating to make these decisions. I already know they're not, because they're saying it requires a 3/8-inch diameter, 70-foot long rope. Like, that's ridiculous. Some people can't throw that rope. It's too heavy. So, like, and actually, if you actually want to save people with ropes, you wouldn't use that rope. That's a beefy rope. To save people with ropes, you would allow for like 50-foot long ropes and, like, I don't know, 1/4-inch even, because some people are incredibly accurate with these smaller ropes. I'm more accurate with the smaller ropes. We all are more accurate with smaller ropes. So, like, by setting a diameter and length is, I think that's not good, because that's not, like, how do they know that's the right rope? It depends on the person. The throw bag we should have is the longest one we personally can accurately throw. And that's different for everybody. I can throw some bags accurately 60 feet. I don't know anybody that can throw bags accurately 70 feet. And I definitely know nobody I know, a lot of good boaters, cannot throw a 3/8-inch diameter 70 feet. Now, the new Cocotap bags, I think that's 1/4-inch rope, or a WWTC bag with like thinner rope, I can throw those things 50, 60 feet with decent accuracy. But 70 feet is just overkill. It's just absolutely overkill. So although I agree that every guide slash boat should have a throw bag and a knife, I don't like the state parks dictating this. Like, the state parks is making, like, every time we're regulated by, like, state parks, the state of Oregon, the state of whatever, they always give us regulations that they think make us safer based on no data. They're just responding to an accident. So there's no data. There's no studies. They're just throwing a thing out there. This will make things safer. When in fact, some of these policies make us less safe. Like, there was a proposal in Oregon that if somebody got hit in the face with a paddle, and then that led to, and they died, that led to a proposal in Oregon to have everybody wear helmets on commercial rafts. Well, if it's 100 degrees out and it's flat water, the helmet can actually, like, make you overheat. So it's more dangerous. The state needs to trust our judgment. And if a person takes a paddle to the face, the helmet doesn't protect from that. Like, the helmet doesn't protect from paddles to the face. It protects the paddles to where the helmet is. So it's not even solving the problem. There's so many examples like this when we're regulated as outfitters by the state, the county, the whatever, by people who don't know what they're doing. It's just a knee-jerk reaction to an accident. And accidents happen whether you have a 3/8-inch diameter, 70-foot long throw bag or not. So just to sum all this up in this whole rant, I think there should be better guide training on the Ocoee River, and that every guide needs to be trained how to use a rope. Definitely second-year guides, but I think first-year guides too. I think the outfitters need to be training everybody to do this, because if they don't, that's when the state comes in and puts on rules that don't make sense. At the same time, like, having done the Ocoee, having seen it, I don't see where throw bags out there are saving people. It's like, there's so many people out there. There's so much traffic. We shouldn't be throwing throw bags from a raft. We should be throwing them from shore. Well, there's so many people everywhere. If somebody falls out, a rope is just a danger. There's people to save them. There's kayakers everywhere. There's boats everywhere. We should be rescuing people with boats and not ropes. Ropes have a purpose, but specifically in Ocoee, when it's just crowded, there's people everywhere, a rope I think what the whoever submitted this question is saying is the rope is maybe a bigger hazard than not having one. And I think in the example of the Akoi, that might actually be true. Because what do you use your rope for? What's the purpose? What do you use it for? If you have a swimmer, you're going to get them with the raft. You're not going to throw a rope to them. You're in your boat. The rope on a river like the Akoi is if a boat gets stuck or a person is stuck on a rock, that's you can use the rope to rescue a person stuck on a rock or a boat perched on a rock, maybe pull it off. But to save the average swimmer, I don't think throw bags are there. So, sorry, I knew that there'd be a really complicated issue and I have a lot of complex thoughts about it. But the bottom line is the state shouldn't be mandating anything. And the outfitters should be doing like making choices based on the safety of their guests. And hopefully the free market, aka the outfitters, comes up with the safest, most responsible solution for that particular river, which I think standard practice is a rope in every boat. But I can see how too many ropes could actually be more dangerous. And I'm going to leave that up to the individual outfitter based on their training and their guides to make that decision instead of, what is it, Tennessee State Parks, who, I don't know, unless the person in charge of this regulation has read studies on safety and is well-versed in whitewater rafting and guiding, maybe. But if they're just a bureaucrat making up a rule, I'm not into this. So, okay, lots of thoughts. I'm going to move on. Okay, Hell's Canyon. Hi, Zach. I scored a Hell's Canyon permit launching June 15th, a new river for me. The next 3 days are scheduled non-jet boat days, so that's nice. Floating from the dam to Heller Bar, we want one layover day. How many total days do you think we should plan for? Any other input for the stretching might share? I've never done Hell's Canyon, so I'm not sure if I can answer this question. Let's see if I wrote, like, I didn't write up a waterguidebook.com. So I didn't write up a description of it for a whitewater guidebook, but somebody might have, and that's where I go to for information. There's Snake River Hell's Canyon. Who did this? Doesn't say. It's pretty limited information, but I'm not sure who did this. Usually we put the author at the bottom. But it's 31 miles. I don't know. That's all the information I have. If anybody else has information, wants to like share, this is the value of this forum. If anybody else wants to share how many days they think they should plan for, any other inputs, please put in the comments. Because I've never done, I've kayaked the Wenaha River into Hell's Canyon and hiked out. And I stayed the night in Hell's Canyon, but I've never wrapped with a snake. So unfortunately I can't answer your question. If anybody has input, throw in the comments. Okay, we scored a middle fork permit for July 14th. Wondering about your thoughts on taking an 18-foot Sotar at that time of year. I've got other options, but the next size down is E140. It's really hard for me to answer these questions, not knowing like you and your expectations and your abilities and just so many factors. I'll just tell you, we run 18-foot boats, whether it's July 16th and it's 6 feet, or August 28th and 1.7 feet. We always run 18-foot boats on the middle fork. It works to me. It works to all flows. And one advantage of the bigger boats, if you can row a bigger boat, if you have these skills to do it, is that it sits higher in the water with the same amount of gear. So if you're trying to decide between an 18-foot and a 14-foot boat, and you're going to bring the same amount of gear either way, I would lean towards the 18 because it just sits higher. A loaded down 14 is a little harder to row than a kind of a light 18. So my answer would be 18 because that's what we always row and it works great. So I'd go 18 foot Sotar. All right, moving on. Zach, big fan of the show. Thank you. I appreciate learning more from you and your friends, colleagues. Yeah, I'm trying to get more of my friends, colleagues involved in the show. As I get busier, it's hard for me to keep doing as many things as I want to do with the show. But when I can bring Tate in or How Pow or anybody else on the show and do extra segments, it's fun for me. And when Tate does Danger Tate episodes, I want to hear the episodes. Like, I really want a Whitewater podcast out there. I just don't want to do it. I don't like interviewing people that much. I'm terrible at it. Where Tate's really good at it. So I really enjoy listening to Danger Tate do interviews. So, yeah, anyway, I want to ask about any beta on the new full Klamath River. We were thinking of putting together a private multi-day on the Klamath and wanted to know how much will change in the planning based on the dam removals. Is it now a full river trip combining what was the upper and lower Klamath? Is there any new info on the changes to rapids and beaches? Again, I haven't done it. I know almost nothing about it, other than it sounds cool. It sounds like maybe it is a new multi-day. Honestly, I have no idea. I don't even know where to start. And I think that's kind of what's cool about it, is like how many, to me, just going, like, doing the same, we all want to do the same six rivers or whatever. It's like, let's get a permit for the Middle Fork, the Rogue, the Main, the Selway, Gates of Lodore, the Yampa, Grand Canyon. Maybe that's eight rivers. We're all fighting for permits on the same eight rivers. There's a lot more rivers out there. It's just, they don't flow in the summer with reliable flows. They're class three or four. You know, they're easier, harder winter runs. I think this Klamath is an opportunity for exploration to, like, pull out some topo maps. Like, it's really fun if you have the skills to run a river without having the beta. Like, I love that. Like, when I started kayaking, we used, I don't know if I have a copy of the book here, we used the a guide to the best whitewater in the state of California. Awesome book. It had a page. It gave you, like, flow range, difficulty, and, like, a funny story of when the authors ran it. Maybe a little beta, like, watch out for a big rapid. It's really fun to, like, figure it out. This is an example, like, right now, of a chance to just figure it out. Like, I don't know, launch and see what happens if you have the skill. So I would personally take this as an opportunity to, like, have a new run before it's mapped out, every beach is figured out, every campground is figured out. Like, it's a chance to go on an adventure. So anyway, the answer is I don't know anything, and I'd like that. Like, if I go do it this year, I'm going to be excited to know not much about it. And Indigo Creek Outfitters advertising multi-day trips. Yes. And so Will at Indigo Creek has been running the river. He has the answers. You could call or email him. I hate saying that because I get a bazillion calls about, like, how low should I run the Oahe? Can I take it at Birch Creek? Am I good enough to run the Middle Fork? I can't field all those questions. And without knowing people, I can't tell them what the future is going to hold. It's a really hard question to answer. That's why I have this Q&A show. I don't know if Will has the capacity to be everybody's trip planning buddy, because he also runs a business. But he has the most information. So following Indigo Creek on Facebook, getting signed up for his newsletters, and, you know, Will's brother. So we were talking about go rafting. Will's actively involved in this project. I think it's his brother Matt's the main one doing it. But some of these maps, Will's done a couple of them, I know. And so he'll probably, oh, cool, Oregon Hole Gorge is up there. That's cool. That's probably something Will did. I'm sure Will did this one. Yeah, this below is written by Will Volpert of Indigo Creek Outfitters. I bet to you that once Will has it dialed, this is where, and there's even, like, right here, there's even, like, Will wrote this blog post I brought up earlier. This is the best beta I know of. And honestly, I'm trying to, like, not look at it because I want to go with fresh eyes and just figure it out when I go for the first time. Like, I don't want to know. I like going in with fresh eyes. But maybe read this and then email Will and ask him what he thinks. But also understand that Will is busy running a business and he may not have time to answer all your questions. Okay, moving on. NWRC Row Your Owns. I see other rafting companies expanding Row Your Owns, and I wanted to ask if NWRC, which is the initials for Northwest Rafting Company, the company I run, will be doing any. Every year when its permit rejection letters come out, the appetite to pay to join a Row Your Own gets more appealing. We're not going to do Row Your Owns. It's just not as something I want to get involved in. I think there's a number of reasons why. One is I think it's a strange use of our commercial like we have a special use permit to run commercial trips. I think it's a weird use of our special use permits. It doesn't make sense. And it's really hard. Like, we run rowing schools. So I'm happy doing education. I'm happy doing, hey, come to us. We're doing a school and we have a little bit more control over you into your school to take care of safety. I like that. And then once we educate you, go out and go boating and figure out. I like education. We will do education for a long time. These row your owns, I worry that it's hard. Like, as an outfitter, we're responsible for people's safety. And it's really hard to be responsible for people's safety when they bring their own boat. They're there to boat the river, not necessarily listen to the guides. And other things. Like, it's hard to control the environment a little bit as an outfitter. And so I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into that. But there are several companies that do, and they're very happy doing it. They're very successful. Orange Torpedo is doing a bunch of it. My friend Ari, who I forget the name of his company, he does a Selway, but he also does row your own on the main salmon. There's maybe some other companies getting into it. I think it's an interesting idea. It's just not something we're going to get into. Again, I'd rather just offer education. If you're going to row your own boat in a course and let's learn things. But if you want to then go out for recreation, I'm going to say go out. And if you can't get a permit, I'm sorry, that sucks. My answer to that is there are a lot more rivers out there that are unpermitted. Like, I think we all get caught up on, again, the ones that run in the summer, reliable flows, that are class 3+4 that match our abilities. Like, we all get caught up in those handful of them. But to me, like, there's boating beyond the permitted rivers. And hopefully those are an option for you, including maybe the Upper Klamath. So, yeah, we're not going to get into the row your own business. That's it. That's the last question. Okay. So with that, I see Sean has one comment, and then we're done. I saw the Creature Craft boys in the first three Oregon Hole Rapids, all one rapid at about 13,000 CFS last Friday. Looked like a fire hose of water. Yeah, I'm sure. I Creature Crafted Oregon Hole once when it was macking big, like massively big. And if I hadn't just done the North Fork, I probably wouldn't have done it. But after feeling the invincibility of the Creature Craft on the North Fork, I'm like, let's go, let's do this. And there's an entrance hole. I took pretty heavy, like, beat down the entrance hole. It spit me out. I got it back up and finished out. It was fun. It was pretty fun. But yeah, it's a great place for Oregon Hole Gorge. Is a great place for Creature Crafts because it's just a flush. There's not rocks to get stuck on. There's one hole that's nasty. Oregon Hole itself is pretty nasty. You know, I heard a Creature Craft's been in there for a long amount of time, but it's easily avoidable. Yeah, I think it's a very friendly to Creature Crafts, but high water rafting and kayaking is like slightly terrifying. So, well, team, that's it for this Tuesday's Gear Garage Live Show. Thank you all for watching, for supporting the show. For those of you that are members, we have a new member, Barbara. Look at this. Barbara, thank you for being a member. If you're a member, I appreciate the few bucks you share with me a month. It helps me, like, spend money on the show. Like, when cameras break, I can buy a new camera. When, I don't know, when I need to buy, like, a new stuff or sign up for a YouTube premium. It helps me pay the bills to do the show. It also makes me just feel cool. And I intend to do member-only content, but I'm usually, and I haven't done member-only content for a little bit. Usually it's when I go boating and something bad. I don't really want to share that video publicly because sometimes, like, people want their pride. They don't want them to be embarrassed to the whole world of their flip or their beat down or their swim. And sometimes some of the stuff when things go wrong is like mildly graphic. Whereas if I share it to members only, it's private to a small audience. And so the main value of being a member, other than just supporting the show so I can spend money on things I need around here to, like, I don't know, do the show, is when things go bad on the river and I'm getting video of it, you get to see that. And I don't put that stuff out to the general public usually. So Yeah, they said Oregon hole itself. Yeah, it is in the creature craft. That hole is pretty nasty, but at high levels, you can should be easily go left of it. It should be pretty easy to miss. But that hole is nasty at those higher levels. So anyway, that's it for this episode. Danger Tate looks like on Thursday is interviewing Charlie Walbridge. That should be a real banger of an episode. So hopefully you're all watching that. And looking forward to that. I am for sure. And yeah, that's it. See you next week.